Talk Shoes.
Recorded live.
Hey, Moon Boy, where you at?
Where am I at?
Well, that's an expression we have down here in New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
That means how are you doing?
Oh, how's it going? It's going pretty well. Pretty well here in Cincinnati.
All right, so you're in Cincinnati now, huh? So, ordinarily, when we do these podcast shows so far, this is actually our 21st episode.
Oh, excellent.
And, yeah, so far, it's always just been Jay and B talking to each other. But Jay, guess what? Jay's on vacation. He is visiting with his family in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
I think, or somewhere, anyway. And I thought, we got in touch online on the old Facebook, and I thought, what a golden opportunity to kind of have you on the podcast.
Well, how fantastic. I'm excited to be here.
Now, you are an old stalwart with Rox back in the glory days of Rox, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
And that was, of course, many years ago, and we haven't really talked for, I don't know, what was it, a good 7 years at least.
Well, something like that. I mean, you know, we breezed through. Larry and I came through town and saw you guys for a little bit. You were gracious enough to host us for a brief visit. But that was indeed a good 5 or 6 years ago, and it felt like it was such a short amount of time. So it just felt like a whirlwind. And
yeah,
I didn't really remember, like, details such as how everybody's doing and things like that, you know. So I was just trying to soak it all in because it was my first trip to such an intense town. So
awesome. Well, now, we call this the nightcap, this series, this podcast. And so what we usually do is we have a drink. I am having some fine brandy, a snifter full of brandy. Are you having anything? Are you having anything to drink there on your end?
Because
I highly recommend it.
Okay. Well, let me see what I can do here. I'm gonna be able to make something with the little absolute, little fruit juice pick me up.
Oh, nice, nice. So you've been in Cincinnati now for how long?
It's been about 8 years, I guess, 7 years, okay. Something like that.
And I've always heard Cincinnati is a very conservative place. Do you find it to be so?
Actually, yes, in some ways. In other ways, not so much. But in some ways, very much so.
That's where, of course, Mapplethorpe got into all the trouble with the city elders there when he had his art exhibit. He was touring the country, as I gather, as a traveling art exhibit, but it was in Cincinnati where he really got in with obscenity charges, I guess, were filed against him or something.
Well, you know, I didn't really know that, but it doesn't come as a big shock, I'll say that.
But I've always found any time that there's a conservative or authoritarian superstructure in place, there's always an underground, an alternative scene that kind of thrives under those circumstances.
Oh, sure. There's no doubt about that. There's quite a few universities around, so there's, of course, all that energy, you know.
And in fact, we
live in the middle of one of the predominantly student neighborhoods, so we're definitely connected with that sort of thing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's
been a bit much for me to explore, so I haven't really gone too deep, if you will, but I know it's there.
And, of course, we had a little misunderstanding when we were communicating there on Facebook.
Yes, I'm so very embarrassed about that. and it's just, I guess, the way I phrased it. I can't say it's not my first time having little trouble in that area. I don't know how to explain it, but I'm rather embarrassed about it.
But you shouldn't be embarrassed at all. I thought it was pretty funny.
Okay, well, I was hoping you would. I figured you would, but again...
Yeah, there was something you said. I didn't realize, I should have realized the truth or something about you and Jay and Christy.
Yeah,
and that made me think that you thought that we had some kind of special relationship or something, you know, some kind of like menage a trois going on. And of course, as
that
I pointed out to you, Christy wouldn't have that.
Well, and I hoped I was reading that right, you know, but I'm on this little mini crusade, you know, the perils of voiceless and faceless communication, you know, because this is not the first time that I've, you know, intended one thing only for it to be taken another way, you know, and I've learned that sarcasm doesn't work in an email, that sort of thing. So we're kind of in that same family of experiences.
Absolutely. Writing, making yourself clear strictly through writing is kind of a hard job, you know, and as Jay would aver, because Jay is a professional writer. He is out in Missoula, Montana these days, writing for the local paper out there. And,
in Montana?
Yeah, Missoula, Montana.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So you are in the Eastern time zone, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, and I'm in the Central time zone. He's in the Mountain time zone. So that means that he's always an hour, what do you call it, you know, it's an hour earlier there.
Right.
And which means that, of course, he's got a little boy, we've got a little girl, and we can't really talk until the kids are in bed.
Mm-hmm.
Especially just before they go to bed is like the worst time to talk. So, you know, once you get him in bed, then it's all good. But his child, of course, is going to bed an hour later than mine.
Uh-huh.
It's an hour earlier out there. So anyway, that has made talking on the phone, well, it would seem like an hour's difference really wouldn't be that big of a deal.
Uh-huh.
But I find these days, what with the demands of parenting and so forth, that I'm just so exhausted.
Sure.
That staying up that extra hour just to talk on the phone can be kind of taxing. So,
understood. I get it completely.
Now the shoe's on the other foot because you, of course, are an hour later than us.
Yes, but I, on the other hand, am without
a baby,
child. So I have.
So you're staying up and partying to the wee hours of the morning.
Yeah, that, you know, happens quite a bit, you know. So,
I'm sure.
But at the very least, I'm up. That doesn't always mean I'm wearing lampshades as a crown, but, you know. but, yeah, my schedule is flexible, so when the moment hits me.
Now, you're doing some kind of teaching, is that right?
Yes. Yes, I do. I teach at a community college.
Oh,
and, yeah.
What kind of
I enjoy it very much. It's kind of a combination technical, but we're expanding our degrees, so we're trying to become a little bit more legitimate. It's corporate-owned school, so what do you call that? I can't ever think of the name of that. But I enjoy it very much. I enjoy the people I work with and the students quite a bit. So those two things are enough to keep me here.
Well, what kind of subjects do you teach?
Basically, I was able to do a few other classes, but because we're expanding the degrees we offer, that changes the accreditation requirements of who teaches what. So at this point, I'm basically teaching their introduction class. So I'm like sitting there with the catcher's mitt, and I take all the people coming in for their very first time.
Oh.
And it's their first welcome back to here's how to be a student kind of class.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I get to come in contact with all the students, and then after, of course, mine, they'll break off into smaller classes and end up with just, you know, the people in those really small classes, their individual focused things. But, so I it's quite interesting. I certainly see a wide variety of people here from Cincinnati, and that's been the most educational experience about it, is just learning about the town through class after class of students coming through my room, so...
Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. There's, of course, I'm working at a university as well,
yes.
Although I do not teach, but
okay.
I can tell you that there has been, you know, plenty of effort to kind of refine and revamp that kind of introductory course that they make all the freshmen take. It's more of a traditional undergraduate population, if you will. Well, historically black as well. But anyway, they are... always trying to fine-tune that orientation class that tells you what college is all about and so forth. And everyone seems to agree it's really important, but how do you actually do it? And the way they do it at this university where I work is it's a zero-credit class. And that, as you can imagine, the students kind of they kind of resent having to take it.
Right.
You know, because they're, of course, it's taking up time and so forth, but they're not getting any credit towards their degree, and so they may not take it as seriously, and so it becomes a real challenge to actually teach that course, I guess.
Well, I can relate to that because even though for our degree setup, this is a accredited class, they've recently added kind of, the basics, kind of less the fundamentals classes for English and math. So if they don't score a certain amount on their introductory assessment test, they have to take those. But those are not counted. Those are not even counted in their financial aid package. So they even have to pay for those themselves. You can imagine that there's starting to be a little bit more people notice that and go, they're not happy about that. They're saying they're not happy about that. So
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, hey, were you able to get onto the website and see some of the old Rocks videos from back
Absolutely.
In the day?
Absolutely. I've been downloading them. Actually, I was downloading one as we speak. I just pulled up an extra window and decided to go check Facebook to see if I could, clarify myself there for you all. I've just been so anxious to contact you since this whole thing happened. So, download and look at some of the old stuff. There was one I didn't even remember, the old drag queen bit. That was funny.
Yeah, it's funny what when you talk about a show that has logged so many hours. It is. There's plenty of stuff that I forget as well that's just buried in there. We covered a lot of ground, although we didn't.
Yeah.
Not geographically, but mentally.
Right. Well, what I love is that you've still been, even though the pace has obviously changed, the drive and the commitment is still there, and that's so awesome. And you've been able to, obviously, because of the miracle of technology, be able to do it with everybody all scattered around the planet, as it were. So
you've seen some of the more recent episodes.
Well, I've downloaded them. I haven't watched them yet, but I'm working my way backwards now.
Okay. We did have Terry Hornsby, or I should say T. Black, in Hong Kong, sending in video from around the other side of the planet.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. I've looked at and seen his pictures and seen his beautiful family as well. So it's just very nice to see everybody, again, branched off but still connected and doing your own thing, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, everybody, of course, has noted that, we live in the era of the global electronic village and that these technologies tend to collapse our sense of physical space. I was just thinking about how true that really is. It just, with regards to like phones, for example, everybody's got cell phones now, and you got to pay for your minutes or whatever, but there's usually no distinction between long distance and local calls. So all of a sudden, the economics of it is that it's just as easy to talk to Moonboy in Cincinnati as it is to talk to somebody on the other side of town.
Yeah. Well, and as it turns out, Larry teaches many different bands and groups. He's back to doing that full time now as a choreographer and instructor, and has hooked up with, there's a group from Australia called John Paul College, and he had, from an old connection years ago, has rekindled that relationship and now goes there to teach the band. And they provided him with... Yeah, all the way to Australia. It's pretty amazing. But they provide him with a phone, and it's the satellite connected, so there's no delay, and it's clear as a bell, and it sounds like he's just right next door, but he's in Australia, the other side of the planet. It was the middle of some winter for us. We were having an ice storm, one of the ones that kicked our butts this winter, and he's in 100 degree weather in Australia summer. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, yeah.
I was just reading an essay about Australia today and thinking how much I would love to go visit.
Yeah. Well, and that's another piece of interesting news. I'm not going there, but I'm going to be making my first trip abroad this summer because he also works with a group from Canada that goes to what's called the World Music Contest in the Netherlands, the southern part of it in the city Kerkrade. So because he, for the last 20 years, had been saving up miles, he was able to buy me a free plane ticket, and we were just been able to work out the finances that I'm going to get to go. He's going with the band, so it's mostly free, and I'm going to be going over there and seeing Amsterdam and perhaps driving around a little bit to little Germany, little Belgium, something like that. But and I'm really excited about it, and just today I realized, or yesterday maybe, I should get a camera and document that. So I could send you some of that footage and kind of update with a Moon Boys summer vacation. You know, now all of a sudden you have a you have a summer vacation series. You know, you can market it that way.
Absolutely, that would be fantastic. And
so,
I, you know, Christy has always been kind of a stick in the mud in terms of traveling to going abroad, and I finally got her convinced to go to Amsterdam. For some reason, she found that more palatable of a destination, and we were kind of starting to save our pennies and think about going. I forget exactly what happened. I think it might have been Katrina or something that spoiled those plans. But anyway, that's kind of off of the radar now. More power to you.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited, and you know, I hope. I mean, I'm going to actually get some little exploration time. So, in addition to some sightseeing things, I'm going to get to, you know, we have a car. So while he's with practicing with the group, I'll be able to tool around and see what I see and see if I can find some interesting things. In the spirit of hoping to be able to share something interesting for your viewing audience.
Oh, believe me, you'll find some interesting stuff.
You would have it.
I was just saying to a friend tonight, you know, I really sometimes I just get so fed up with the United States that I just want to move to Amsterdam.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of people feel that way.
I lived in Sweden for a year, as you may recall, but, you know, Amsterdam's plenty cold enough. Sweden is just out of the picture.
Sure. Understood.
The winters. It's tough.
Well, you know, I'll see for myself. You hear about the dark side of it all too, you know. So, I'm sure we have an interest in seeing all things possible there in Amsterdam. So, I'll see it for myself.
Yeah.
It sounds is like it's crumbling as much as they say.
Yeah, I don't know. It's good to. It's the funny thing is that we kind of feel a special bond with the Netherlands here in New Orleans because they're below sea level, or, you know, a good portion of the country is below sea level. I think something like a quarter of it.
That makes sense. I didn't know that, but I remember looking at the map going, boy, that's real crazy looking up there with all that water. And that's what I hopefully we'll get a chance to look at somewhat, is just how all that looks and works. And, yeah, I bet you it's interesting.
That's why they call it the Netherlands. I think it means the low-lying lands. And,
no kidding.
So once upon a time, people from the Netherlands, engineers, were coming over to New Orleans to study our flood control systems. And now, of course, the shoe is on the other foot. And we've been going over there to study theirs because it's been made such a mess of over here.
Good grief. And it's just, you know, and I'm catching up, so I can't imagine that I'm saying anything that hadn't been said before. But my biggest thought was, why is this such a shock to everybody? When it was happening, I mean, of course, I'm feeling for the tragedy of the hurricane and what's going on, but part of me is going, how come nobody had said before, you know what, this really wouldn't hold. Maybe we should do something about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's really interesting is that before Katrina, there were some articles published in our local paper, the Times-Picayune, and it was generally known that there was a doomsday scenario where a hurricane hits New Orleans at just the right angle and kind of sucks Lake Pontchartrain right over the lake levees right into the city.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that although that was something that people knew could happen or theorized could happen and feared, it in fact did not happen. That's not actually what happened. In fact, the hurricane veered away from New Orleans at the last minute, and so it didn't really get hit in this special way that people were worried about. And the levees were not, overtopped. The Lake Pontchartrain was not sucked over the levee and so forth. Instead, it was some drainage canals that had flood walls that failed, and then the water came backing up through those canals and flooded most of the city that way.
So had it hit the right way, would they have held? Had they been prepared in the way that they thought they needed to be enough?
Oh, no. Absolutely not. And that's
okay. So they weren't prepared no matter how it hit.
If the flood walls had been built properly, the Army Corps of Engineers has said that that was a design flaw. It was inherent in the design of it, and that it was just a matter of time, I guess, you'd say, before that something like that happened. And that shouldn't have been the case. So if they'd been built properly, then Katrina would not have caused flooding in the city.
It would just be bouncing
merrily along.
There still
would be the doomsday scenario that someday, you know, it's kind of like an earthquake could hit Los Angeles and blah, blah, blah. There's things you can do to prepare. The thing is with the engineering and so forth, if you look at the way they design our flood control systems now and the way that the Dutch do it in the Netherlands, in the Netherlands they design for a storm that might occur once every 10,000 years in some cases.
Huh.
In other words, very, very rare. They say once every 10,000 years. That means it has a 0.01% chance of happening in any given year.
Ever happening, yes.
Yeah. But in the United States, instead of designing for a 10,000-year storm, our standard is a 100-year storm.
I see.
Yeah, any given year, there's a 1% chance that you'll meet the circumstances that will overwhelm the system. You'll get hit by that kind of storm. Only a 1% chance per year, but it adds up. And eventually, the result is that over a course of a lifetime, chances are you're going to get that. You are going to get that. And, I mean, that's just what we design for. That's what we plan for. That's in essence, what we buy with our tax dollars. We've said that this is the level of protection that we're aiming for.
Right.
And they just aim a hell of a lot higher in the Netherlands.
Well, I guess I just can't. Yeah, I guess so. I just can't imagine that all the wealthier business people of the city of New Orleans didn't have more concern about that. You know, as they're building and putting all kinds of money into the city and developing and doing all that, how come they never said, you know, what happens if, you know? I guess that's the thing, is it just seemed like it was such a shock to people. That's the way it appeared to us through the long-distance media. And I don't mean like the citizens like you guys. I mean like, you know, the governments. Like they just were like, huh? What? Oh, or I don't know. It just totally caught off guard. Like it.
No, you're absolutely right. Now, the thing to keep in mind is that those flood control systems are actually built by the federal government. So, it gets pretty complicated with the state, and local, and federal, and so forth.
But, right. So I guess, you know, I just mean whoever should have known should have known.
Yeah, they should.
So I guess I don't mean to point the finger at your local government.
Well, you should. They certainly bear a lot of the blame. But the thing is that it does kind of seem like, as a nation, we have some misplaced priorities. There's all this, bridge that collapsed in Minneapolis or Minnesota somewhere?
Yes, and I think about that every time I drive over our bridge here. I think about it.
Well, it's the same thing. What flooded New Orleans was some failed infrastructure.
Yeah.
And because that bridge collapse is really the same thing, you know, we just haven't kept up our infrastructure because we don't want to, you know, it's expensive to do that.
Right.
The hope, I guess, is that one way that we could build our economy back out of this economic crisis is with the jobs programs. You know, the government could employ people to rebuild our infrastructure and so forth. And I guess some of that is being planned, but not really quite to the level I think that it needs to be. In particular, we could really use a program like that down here to rebuild the Gulf Coast, because one of our biggest problems, long before the flooding in 2005, is just this vast poverty that we have in the city of New Orleans. I mean, it's not unique to urban America, but it's pretty bad, and you know, that's one way to alleviate poverty is with jobs programs. But those are kind of out of fashion.
Well, you know, and I also have to say, and I'm not trying to be overly cynical, I suppose, but this whole deal with the auto industry doesn't surprise me one bit. I remember being 10, going, how can they just keep making all those new cars every year? Are we really buying that many new cars? It just seemed like it was inevitable that one day we would hit a brick wall, and we sure did. And so it doesn't surprise me that this is happening. and the greed in corporate America, it doesn't surprise me that the banks are failing. And so I'm like, whatever, you know, it's all going to burn down around me. They're all, I don't know. I guess it just makes me feel better to realize that, I don't know, I'm just on a ride and we'll see what happens, but people should have known.
Well, for sure. And it does, you know, when we had this, at one point during this crisis, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if we took advantage of this to kind of take a new direction with the economy? Because one of the problems I have with our basic thinking about the economy is it's always growth. It's always got to be growing, more, bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
But that's really not healthy in some ways.
Yeah.
And an organism that just grows and grows and grows doesn't survive.
Eventually explodes. Doesn't that just make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So there's another school of thought on economics, you know, that, where you could define successful economy as one where you maintain a steady state. And, of course, you do want to spread it around, share the wealth, as they say. You want to eliminate poverty and make sure that everybody has a certain level of prosperity.
Yeah.
If it's all possible. And it is possible. But that's really not, it seems like, where we've aimed our sights. It's like the in this economic crisis now, the main focus is on just getting back to where we were.
Yeah.
And where we were wasn't that great.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's got to be major if anything's really going to be effective. And I think it's inevitable. And, again, so another one of the – you know, V8 moments that I feel like I've had over the last few years, and now all of a sudden you're getting a lot of talk and hype, is green energy. And I'm like, doesn't that just make sense? Every home has an air conditioning unit outside. Why doesn't every home have, you know, the mechanism to capture the wind power, the solar power? The sun ain't going anywhere. Why is that not our focus? And why aren't the oil companies the idiots to be the ones to lead us in that direction, to save their asses, to help the economy, to totally open up whole new industries, which kind of solve things on a bigger scale, don't they? I mean, I'm no genius, but if I'm sitting here having this thought, why aren't these multi-billionaires, you know, figuring that out? I don't understand that. That's why I just don't really, I'm kind of apathetic towards watching news and stuff, because I'm kind of like, I don't care. I mean, you know, the idiots who screwed it up are so bad, I don't know. I'm not in a position to help. But if I'm having those thoughts, why aren't they, you know?
Well, for sure.
A little tirade there.
No, that's, I think we're all entitled to a little tirade in these times.
Yeah, so I see on the website there where your last entry was, you know, something about why, remember when this show used to be about having fun, why can't we get back to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That statement kind of rang in my head a little bit. I was like, oh, man, that's too bad. But, you know, the point of your show was to do what's actually called reality TV, you know, where you don't know what's going to happen and you just go with it. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say on a day-to-day basis, I'm pretty happy with life and so forth. So it's not like I'm walking around miserable. In fact, when I look back to some old journals and stuff that I used to write back when, finishing up high school, spending a year abroad, and then college, during that time, my perspective on life was much, much bleaker.
Much what?
Much, much bleaker. Much,
I see.
Yeah, much more, I guess you could say, depressive or nihilistic, not really knowing what to believe in, wanting, you know, kind of to believe in something. But that was all a result of, you know, being brought up in a kind of strict religious philosophy and then losing faith in that.
Right. I completely understand. And viewing one of the old episodes, it just, I remember you guys really defined one of your underlying themes, you know, in your rebellious thing. You were all about censorship. Like, that was one of your big things that you were politically fired up about, you know, making a big deal about. And I'm sitting here thinking, wow, remember the good old days when the worst thing that you had to complain about was censorship?
Yeah, no kidding.
You know? So I thought that kind of... That kind of brought it all home for me a little bit there.
Yeah, we had a few, excesses, but, you know, you're talking to a guy who's arrested for running across campus naked.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't mean to say like that's your, you know, a one note or anything. I was just saying that was just something that happened to come across in an episode, and I was like, yeah, it's just one of many things, you know.
Oh, sure. No, I mean, actually, that's one thing that probably one of the more noble ways of putting it is that we were, I remember somebody said that we were going out on a limb for free speech,
uh-huh.
amendment rights, and so forth. And actually, as silly as it may seem, that it, the end result of our stirring things up at the community access television station in Bloomington, Indiana, is that they clarified their policy. And they defined the station as being a constitutional forum. In other words,
I see.
Anything that the law allows as freedom of speech is allowed on that television station.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, it's no more or less than the First Amendment, which is not freedom to say anything. There's certain things that are not covered by the First Amendment, right? I mean, you can't get on there and make a program that says overthrow the government, take up arms, and overthrow the government.
Right.
You couldn't do that.
Right.
But anything that's covered by free speech,
yeah.
You can do. And so Michael White, anyway, the director of the station, told me that was a direct result of our agitating and kicking up a fuss and causing all kinds of, you know, because that had to be up until then, they were talking about, well, you know, community values. That's what they were
right.
telling us, which is very vague and so forth. Very,
yes.
Very kind of like what Cincinnati was doing to MapleCorp, I guess.
Yeah. And now I also had a question. On the website there, the list under enemies, it lists, is it Eric, is it Black, is it White? I can't remember.
Oh, Eric Black, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It, really? Or is that a persona that you guys are...
Eric Black was a persona of Eric White's. Eric Black was the leader of the More Life Coalition.
Gotcha, and he's the enemy.
Exactly. But, of course, he's a fictional character. Of course, I should update that because Eric White is no longer Eric White. He changed his last name.
Did he really?
Yeah. He got married to a woman. And he had always said that if he married a woman who had a more interesting last name than him, that he would change his last name, which he did.
Oh, wow.
Now his last name, because White is, you know, it's White, very very kind of boring name, right? So now his last name is Eric Spears.
Spears.
Spears, yeah.
Wow. How, that's really cool.
And he is out in New Hampshire, I believe.
Wow.
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, I see. Very, very funny. I like that a lot.
We had him here with his wife, actually, to teach a class on nonviolence shortly after September 11th.
Wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah, that's cool. And there's probably lots of other things that I should update you on. We got flooded during Katrina, of course.
Yeah.
Rebuilt the house. And actually, you see some video footage of that if you download videos from the Rocks website. There's some pretty good videos.
They're up there.
And what else? Rebuilt and had a baby. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. Right. She looks gorgeous.
Yeah, she's pretty cute.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's just awesome. You know, I realized that I'm so bad with details, but that's when I realized you'd probably caught me up on how everybody had been dispersing, and I just didn't remember. And that added to my self-inflicted humiliation over this whole thing. But I'm just glad to know that you guys have had a good chuckle about it.
Oh, yeah. That was funny.
Yeah.
And the strange thing about Facebook is that I'm, you know, connecting with all kinds of people from the past in a way that I just don't think we would have before. You know, I mean,
right?
There's ex-girlfriends and stuff like that people that you hung out with when you were in high school or in college, and then you moved on, and you probably would never see them again, or you talk to them again. unless you were really obsessed and just, you know, and then it would be kind of scary because you'd be being contacted by, you know, somebody that you hadn't heard of. Why are you getting, you know, why are you bothering me? And it's just like, you know, it's just like a fun thing to do. And all of a sudden we're in touch with our past. And that's why I think Facebook is so appealing to the, the folks our age and older.
Yeah. Yes. And that's been happening to me as well. And, you know, it's interesting you say that. I didn't go to either of my high school reunions. So, I mean, that was just part of it, was that little mild insecurity or fear or whatever, you know.
Sure.
It didn't really seem like it would be worth it to do. It wasn't convenient until now. So now that it is, it's like, and it seems to be just fine. You know, there's not been any problems. So far so good. I've been doing it about 6 weeks now, maybe.
Still
pretty new.
Good story for you on the high school reunion front.
Okay.
Of course, Katrina hit in 2005.
Yes.
And I graduated from college, or from high school rather, in 1985.
Yes.
So I ended up evacuating all the way up to Bloomington, Indiana, just a couple days really before my 20-year high school reunion.
Wow. Happenstance.
Just by happenstance. And so I got in contact with old Toast. And,
oh, my goodness.
We went up to Greenwood, Indiana. And, at the high school reunion, of course, I had the story that really took the cake in terms of everybody saying, so what do you do? Where do you live these days? New Orleans? One week after Katrina, are you kidding me? People had their jaws on the floor.
Sure. Of course.
And I of course, was a practically an emotional basket case, so, you know, it was actually kind
of
tough. But it was a trip.
Surreal. That had to be a very surreal experience for you.
It was very surreal. I mean, in some ways, I hardly even remember it because I was being so overwhelmed by other stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But it was
I'm
hanging out with Toast. He seems like quite the kind of New Age guru type kind of guy.
Well, that's very cool and interesting you mention him because out of the blue, I do a lot of judging for the Winter Guards. That's kind of what I'm still connected with all the color guard stuff, but I judge contests now. And I had judged the state finals for the Winter Guard season this year, and I didn't know it at all, but apparently he was there and sitting in the stands and watched me walk up, but thought, oh, this probably isn't a good time to say anything. And then a mutual friend of mine contacted me later and gave me his number because they had talked and I didn't, you know, and after the show. So the next day I called him and we talked on the phone for about a half an hour. But that felt very, very out of the blue and kind of random. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were able to reconnect. And so there you go. I guess he's not on the Facebook, but I've tried. I guess none of his family seems to be. I would have wanted to contact his brother and sister and mom and stuff too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, funny who is and who isn't. I've gotten in touch with people that I wasn't even looking for people on Facebook necessarily. It was just getting in touch with some of these old people was stirring up a lot of memories and making connections, looking at old photos, old journal entries and so forth, and just kind of remembering some of my past. And I was remembering this woman that I knew she was an American, but she was living in Sweden for a year when I was there. And I could only remember her first name. It's a pretty common first name. But I didn't know her last name. So how on earth could I ever find her, right? Well, then I remembered that she was dating this guy, this Swedish guy, with a distinct Swedish name. Right? And I was like, I think that they were talking about getting married. And I typed his name and her name in, and boom, I found her on Facebook. She was on Facebook.
Wow, lo and behold.
And they're married and they've got kids, you know, and that was 25 years ago, almost.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of crazy. And I resisted it because I'm normally bad about correspondence. You know, certainly emails. I can't say that I'm anxious to get on there and spend hours emailing people. It just doesn't happen. So, but this Facebook seems so convenient because it's just kind of minute to minute and it can be light or, you know, different people spend different amounts of time on it. You know, some people don't ever post. Some people only post every couple of weeks. Some people post five times a day. And it's just interesting how people use it differently.
Well, I think I was on there for a year before I even saw the value of it.
Wow.
It was just I had a membership, and, you know, it's because kind of part of what I do at the university, I just dabble in these things.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, I don't really see the point of this. but eventually, I have come to see the point. In fact, I've taught some little workshops on it.
Wow.
And, but just to give you a little example of the kind of, I don't know, utility or the power or the popularity of Facebook, are you familiar with Delicious?
Say what again?
Are you familiar with a web service called Delicious?
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, Delicious is just a website for social bookmarking. Basically, it's a way that you can save bookmarks. You know, when you save bookmarks on your browser,
yeah,
they're not that good in a way because if you go to another browser, you don't have your bookmarks. If you go to another computer, you don't have your bookmarks. They just kind of pile up, and then they can be hard to manage, and you know, to actually find an interesting website that you bookmarked. So there's a lot of problems with bookmarks. So Delicious, the idea of Delicious was you could save your bookmarks to a website. Then wherever you went, you could still access them because they're on this website.
Right.
And while we're at it, let's make it social so that you can see other people's bookmarks.
Oh,
everybody
wow.
can everybody can see everybody's bookmarks.
Now, isn't that a little scary?
Well, I mean, you wouldn't bookmark something private, I guess. But
I guess that would be different. Yeah, if not for that.
Yeah, it's not for that. Actually, you know, you can mark an individual bookmark as private if you want, but the whole purpose of it is social. So it's a way of drawing attention to sites and discovering sites that other people have found. Anyway, so I've used Delicious for a while. It's just a handy way for me to bookmark things.
Yeah.
And still find the stuff later, you know, a month later or a year later when I'm looking for that thing, I can find it because I bookmarked it on Delicious. Well, but the social aspect is really not that powerful because there are just not that many people looking at my bookmarks on Delicious.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about Facebook is that you can feed most of these web services, most of these social network services, you can feed into your Facebook profile. And so I feed my Delicious bookmarks into my Facebook profile. Now, when I save a link to Delicious, people do see it, and I get reactions that I never used to get when
wow.
I would use Delicious. So, for example, today I was reminiscing about this Christian summer camp that I went to as a kid and how much I enjoyed it. And I was just
yeah.
wondering, you know, is there something like that that's, I guess you would say, still has that spiritual dimension, but not necessarily, you know, you must follow our strict rule of Christianity of this particular sect. Is there something like that that's out there? Is there like a pagan summer camp for kids? You know? And so I started looking around, and I found this program called Spiral Scouts.
Uh-huh.
It was founded by some pagans, or some Wiccans, but they have opened it up. It's an international scouting program that's really focused on religious diversity and religious tolerance, and you can be completely
wow.
secular. It's very flexible and blah, blah, blah. It just seemed pretty cool. And so I bookmarked it. And within 30 minutes, I was getting a call from a professor at the university who thought that that was just very interesting and wanted to do a service learning project around it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought this is cool. Well, he saw it through Facebook.
Okay. That was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah, he saw it through Facebook.
That's really cool. You know, it's interesting. Most of the time I'm looking at, not most, but oftentimes I'm looking at it at work when I have a funny schedule. So I have many hours in the day on certain days a week. And so I have some time to look around on there. I can't like watch videos. I can't, it's pretty low tech, the whole computer
sure.
system there. So I don't get to like, you know, check out all the funny things people send in emails and stuff like that. But
well, you know,
but I guess if that's just a website, then I can go to that. It does do that. So
right.
Yeah.
Usually, this is going to sound funny, considering the fact that you know, I've got so many videos online on rocks.com, but I just don't like watching video on the computer as a rule. I mean, I guess if it's the only way you can get that video, then I'll watch it. But usually when I'm in front of the computer, I'm doing stuff.
Yes.
And if I'm not, someone described it as a lean forward medium rather than a lean back medium. And usually when I'm just in a different mindset. When I'm sitting in front of a computer, I want to be doing stuff. And when I'm actually wanting to kick back and relax and sit back, I'm usually sitting in front of a television or you know, a movie screen.
Yeah, I feel you there. And I'm not even somebody that has the drive to be on the computer initially. So I'm having to, you know, work past that and overcome that a little bit.
Yeah, I spend way too much time in front of the computer screen, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's so easy to do, and especially for somebody that works. We've got friends that, you know, do a lot of writing of band drills and stuff, so they spend a lot of time on the computer. So, you know, but that's just – so it's easy to just flip to Facebook, throw something in, and they are the ones, a lot of them, that, you know, will post 4 or 5 times a day.
The computer technology and so forth has really transformed every aspect of intellectual endeavor.
If
you're talking about anything that involves mental work, it seems like you can do it on a computer in a slightly more efficient fashion. Although maybe not a better way.
Right.
It may be a more. It does kind of seduce you in there with the promise. But I found that there's, you know, I do a lot of writing online and or just on the computer, but I find that I kind of write differently and think differently about writing in kind of in a more relaxed fashion, I guess you would say, when I've got a pen and paper and just in writing the old-fashioned way.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly nothing like, I mean, writing a paper. I just finished an online degree. And so I had to write a lot of papers, but even though it was an online class, an online degree and everything, writing papers, I still have to write it, print it out, and look at it in my hands. There's just no substitute for that. I just found that is the case for me.
Well, reading off of a screen is kind of slow. It's slower than reading off a paper for most people. And,
it just looks different. For some reason, I have a different perspective. I'm sorry to cut you off there.
That's right. I was just going to say that comprehension, I believe, is probably higher when you're reading off of the printed page.
But why is that, I wonder? I agree.
Well, one thing is resolution. The resolution of the printed page is much higher than screen resolution. So your eye strain is less, and you can really concentrate, I think, more on the words. But as screens get higher in resolution, and they come out with these things like the Kindle and other products are like e-books. They're electronic readers that try to emulate more and more the actual feel and look of the book.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. You know, maybe that will change.
Well, I suppose. I don't know. I still have better perspective. I feel like I can really see the page and see what's going on when I can hold it in my hands. I don't know. It's a little psychological. I guess it's a safety blanket, right?
Sure, but what if you could hold it in your hands? What if you could hold it in your hands, but it was a computer?
Well, I suppose that makes sense. I was also just thinking that even, you know, under the best circumstances, you still have to slide the bar up and down to see the whole page. And I guess there's something about that. It's like, you know, being able to writing in a convertible, you can look all around and you don't have, but it, when you're trying to see something up in the sky and you're in a regular car, you have to lean really far and strain to have to see it. It feels kind of like that.
Well, you're right. And that's one of these things that these electronic book readers try to do. They're more ratio. Yeah, it's more of a vertical aspect ratio to be like a printed page so that you can see the whole page at once.
Well, and I think also holding it in your hands would make a big difference too. So that does kind of help because you're still in control then of what you're looking at. I don't know.
Imagine if you had a piece of paper that was a computer. And, yeah, you could fold it up and put it in your pocket, but it can display different things. So, you know, you could read a whole book on just a single piece of paper because you just have page forward. Remember, you know,
well, and you would think that I would, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, what would that do to our sense of culture?
Oh, yeah, and I love that idea. You might think that I would read more books if that sort of thing were more available, but I'm sure it's available. I'm far removed. I'm not a technophobe, but I'm not a technophile.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I don't know. It actually kind of worries me.
Really?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I the idea of even cell phones worried me once upon a time. I thought, crazy. I still don't understand wireless internet. I mean, like, I get it, but I don't really get it, you know?
And you don't get how it works. You don't get the appeal.
Yeah. I get the appeal, obviously. Our whole internet system where we are and our portion of the house is on wireless. So, I mean, that's our total connection. I just can't imagine how is it we're getting so much information, how it works. I'm still amazed by the telephone, by the radio, you know, like, I don't know. Anything I can't see, I guess. I'm just so visually oriented that if I can't see it, I'm amazed. It's crazy to me, you know. It's almost alien.
Well, if you could see it, though, I mean, then you'd really be in a bind because if you could imagine seeing all the stuff that's flying past us every second
in
the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wonder if that's why everybody's so much edgier these days than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. We're constantly, well, you know, it's weird. I was in, I was in one of the drum and bugle corps. And last year they had their 60th anniversary and they put together an alumni corps. And so I participated in that. I got to march in the Bloomington IU Stadium because the dome in Indianapolis wasn't finished yet. So our backup plan was IU. That's where DCI was last year. So I got to perform with that group there. And so we're practicing up on the southeast side of Indianapolis at this school, and there's all these power lines up above. And I was in the color guard, so I've got my flag, which was a metal pole. And just all of a sudden, I just was getting these little tiny minor shocks, you know, from holding onto the pole, and nobody else seemed to be. And I was like, what is going on? It kind of freaked me out. Well, then, you know, about down the line, about seven or eight people, somebody else was like, yeah, that was happening to me too. And we're under these power lines, and I guess in my mind, I picture electricity dripping off the power lines and showering us with electricity. And for some reason, it just got me. I don't know. But
yeah,
it was amazing to me because I was like, is that really what's going on? You don't see anything, obviously.
Yeah, that sounds pretty spooky, though.
Yeah. I was gullible to the magician, you know. If you can fool me with your eyes, I'm fooled. I admit that. Character flaw. Well, this has been awesome, and I really enjoyed this. I think I do need to in the conversation, though, at this point.
Yes, I think this is a good stopping point. It has been a pleasure.
What fun, and I'm so glad to reconnect and hear about how everybody's doing, and I'm definitely here, and I'm caught up now. I'm officially caught up.
Yes, you are, and you will see this. It may take a day or two for, I don't know exactly how long it'll take me, but you'll see this show up on Facebook as Nightcap number 21. Or you can just go to that website. I sent you the link, nightcap.rocks.com.
Nightcap 21?
Yeah, it'll be Nightcap number 21.
Okay.
And
excellent.
And you can listen to this conversation again and again.
Fantastic. I'm thrilled to be to help in any way that I can. Sorry I was such a spaz 15 years ago, by the way. I couldn't.
Right.
That's another thing that was getting me. I'm like, boy, I just needed to take a Quaalude or something. I was pretty wound up, it seems. So.
You're always a pleasure to be around. And you've contributed to some of my favorite moments on the TV show, especially that thing about, you know, when Christy was basting her fish.
I have to catch up to that.
Yeah, you got to watch that. That's available as a little clip.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you got to watch.
She's basting a fish?
The fish basting. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, fish based?
Fish basting. Yeah, remember I sent you the link to your personal page on Rocks.
Yes.
In the right-hand side, there's a list of media links to specifically feature you. So
right on.
Check those out.
Okay, yeah, absolutely I will. That's fun.
And most of those are like short little snippets. They're not full-length episodes.
Right, right. I did download Dumpster Diving. What a favorite that is of mine. And I showed that to some friends, and we were just howling with laughter.
Yeah, that was a goodie.
Wonderful.
All right.
Well, my friend, what fun, and best, I'm glad to hear that. Well, then everybody's well. Love to you and your family.
Right on. Good night.
Good night.